and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. We're all reeling from last night's televised Tory leadership hustings. Katie, did you have a main takeaway from it other than that you were just glad that the chaos was over?
Messy. I'm not sure who won. I don't think the BBC won when you look at that debate. It was a format which a lot of pressure on Boris Johnson ahead of it. The sense being that this, and I think I said this myself, this was a risk moment for him. In the end, it didn't feel that risky for him. I think partly because you ended up having five candidates going through and no one was quite sure how many candidates would be in this debate because we had the second ballot just before. It was only Dominic Raab who was knocked out. And I think the fact that you had five people debating meant that it was harder to pick a certain person down. And also the format, which was questions from members of the public from a studio down the line, meant it almost had the sense that the contenders were very eager to please the specific person and spent about half their answers often giving that person compliments, also saying how much they respect them and the hardships they had been through, rather than actually getting to the topic of what they would do to solve that or where they agreed with the point or what the policy would be. And then you at times went back to the person who would then give their verdict. I think in that sense, I thought Jeremy Hunt did quite well, at least in Oxford, because there was one question where on tax, and I think you couldn't really have written it better if you were Jeremy Hunt's team, which is interesting, which is the idea that this man turned back and said, I thought Jeremy Hunt's answer was very good. Thank you, Jeremy. Rory, you're talking rubbish. Now, given that Jeremy Hunt's campaign has lost momentum and Rory Stewart's has gained it, I think that was very good for that team. I think Sajid Javid really came through and was much more combative and really seemed to get himself into the debate or into the leadership race even in a way that he has struggled to do. And as for Boris Johnson, I think we can get on to the question on Islamophobia and the questions now surrounding it. But I would say that's probably his most difficult answer. But even then, I don't think he was really dented by that. I don't think it was a, you know, show-stopping performance that inspired the nation to think Boris Johnson is the man to, you know, lead the Tories to win a majority. But I don't think he had dented his campaign in any way. So therefore, I think the Boris Johnson team will be happy with it.
I think the big thing is that Rory Stewart's momentum was checked. The other candidates made a concerted effort to get after him. And Rory Stewart kind of responded by, I think lots of people expected Rory Stewart to go for Boris Johnson last night. He ended up going for all of the candidates on stage. I was very struck by, a few minutes after the end of the debate, an MP called me, who's undeclared, who is precisely the kind of person Rory Stewart needs if he's going to get to the final two. And he was very cross with Rory Stewart because he felt that Rory Stewart had kind of trashed the entire Tory brand. I think this person would have been quite happy if Rory Stewart had trashed the Boris brand, but he felt that the attacks on kind of all the candidates were being kind of out of touch with reality. And Stewart extending that from Brexit to the entire domestic agenda had really irritated this person. So I think you combine that with the concerted Brexiteer effort to get him off the vote today, and I think Stewart's momentum has definitely been checked. I think Katie's right that the format meant that no candidate got pinned down. So in a way, Boris Johnson didn't have the danger for him, which was a kind of forensic examination on all these questions. I also thought you saw something else, which is Boris Johnson's campaign had clearly urged him not to wade into controversy. But as the debate went on, you could see that he was kind of getting an itchy finger, and then he wanted to get in more and more and more. And that last third of the debate, he was talking far more. And at the end, he really wanted to come back in. And Emily made this like, no, we haven't got any time now. We've got to end this. But you could tell, and this is going to be one of the challenges, you know, he is not a politician who likes being told to play it safe, even though that is his campaign's strategy at the moment.
Do you think it's going to be the strategy once it goes to the membership?
No. My hunch is that when it comes to the membership, he will try and turn those hustings almost into rallies. The audience there at those hustings will be, by definition, of Tory members. And he will try and kind of pump them up and get them going and make it feel much more like a rally rather than a debate between two candidates. And I think that, you know, obviously, the greater the sense of inevitability about his candidacy, the easier that will be to do for him. And also, this is why the question of who his opponent is matters so much.
Katie, do you think the Conservative Party as a whole came out well from those debates?
Not massively. I think that it was a bit of a lose-lose, though, to some degree, because there's been lots of criticism of the fact this is a contest of which the people who get to say are a very, very small percentage of the population, and the public are going to have this person as Prime Minister, so therefore it shouldn't be taking place behind closed doors. Now, I think there are two audiences in this Tory leadership contest, and one is the people who get a say, so MPs and members. So I think you can see why lots of MPs think this is more of a job interview, but clearly they have to be mindful to the other audience. Now, I think if they weren't going to do debates, it would be a bad look if they weren't going to do any of these interviews and so forth. But I think as soon as you agree to do these debates, it does clearly descend into this blue-on-blue type of scenario, which could be weaponized by opposition leaders. Now, I think there's still probably a stronger argument for doing the debates than not, but I think it's hard to see how you can really have, with this many candidates at least, a more constructive version of it, unless every candidate agrees to the same thing. But there's always going to be one candidate who feels that they need to be pluckier to make their mark. I think what would be interesting is we are expecting one-on-one interviews with Andrew Neil in the next week or so, once the final two have been decided. And I think that would be probably more illuminating in terms of format than a debate. And that would be where I think people who want to know what the new Prime Minister is actually about will probably be able to glean more, just because I think that is a format which will lend itself more to it.
I also think that Jeremy Corbyn got a whole bunch of material to use at PMQs. I think it is quite extraordinary for Jeremy Hunt, who was the Health and Social Care Secretary until relatively recently, to say that social cuts to social care had gone too far. And you have today, in a separate interview, Sajid Javid saying he would put back on the police all the officers that Theresa May, in inverted commas, took off the street, because the cuts were linked to the rise in violent crime. The Corbyn script about the consequence of austerity has been written very easily for him by these Tory candidates. And I think this is one of the big risks, which is that, you know, at the end of it, Jeremy Corbyn says, you have to take my word for it. Just listen to what the former Health and Social Care Secretary says. Listen to what the Home Secretary says as he runs through the so-called consequences of austerity.
Now, Katie, there's been a row this morning about one of the people who asked questions last night. Explain what's going on.
Yes, so I think actually since this podcast started, there are now two rows. The first row is Abdullah from Gloucester speaking from a studio in Bristol as he was introduced. And he asked a question about Islamophobia. Now, it's probably one of the most difficult questions, as we mentioned the night, for some of the candidates. You saw Sajid Javid use it to press on this idea of having an inquiry and get other candidates to agree to that. But it has now since transpired through Abdullah's Twitter account, or what appears to be his Twitter account, that he has been very critical of the Conservative Party. He has tweeted several things about Jews. He is someone who has defended Corbyn. He once tweeted, every political figure on the Zionist payroll is scaring the world about Corbyn. They don't like him. He seems best suited to tackle them. And it's clearly brought into the conversation a question of, what is the vetting procedure at the BBC? Because if you were trying to have a debate where you're asking the next Prime Minister these questions, is that the person you'd want to ask that question? Now, the BBC have said that, I wouldn't exactly call it an apology if you so far, but they've issued, some have apologised, but others have said, well, this account was deactivated, this Twitter account. So when they actually went through the vetting process, he had no social media presence, and it was only reactivated after the debate, and at that point you can see all the previous tweets. So I think there was a sense of, well, we couldn't have actually prevented this. You've already seen people kicking back saying, well, when did you start your vetting procedure? There's a second row brewing about one of the questions, because I think it's someone who appears to have previously worked or been involved with the Labour Party who asked the final question. So I think the BBC are being asked if they created the fairest platform on this, and are going to come under more scrutiny about that.
James, the questions are still valid though, aren't they?
I think there's a question about, if someone asks a question about words having consequences, their own words have to be above reproach. You know, by definition, from what this imam said last night, he believes that his tweets have consequences. And I think that has to be considered. I think the BBC let the debate down because the question loses its moral authority or moral force if the person asking the question appears to be as compromised as this gentleman does. I think that is a problem. I also think that, I have some sympathy for the BBC in this respect, which is, it is difficult to organise a debate when 2 hours before it starts, you don't know whether you're going to have five people there or three people there. But even having said that, I think last night was an example of what we get wrong about the idea of TV debates in this country. We have the idea that TV debates in this country takes five chairs, or slightly uncomfortable looking barroom stools, and a TV camera and a host. In America, they have a whole commission on presidential debates that litigate all of this stuff. You know, even the primary debates within the party, you know, there's weeks of negotiations about it. And it's easy in a kind of British way to kind of laugh at the Americans for being prissy and precious. But the format last night really didn't help anyone trying to understand politics. If you were coming into that debate looking to be informed about what these candidates fought, I don't think you'd have walked away particularly illuminated. And I think there were some structural things that could have been done about the way the questions were asked. I thought it was weird to choose to have questions come down the line from around the country in a kind of throwback to Nationwide from the 1970s. You know, either have a Emily Maitlis host the debate and be the ringmaster and ask the questions, or have a studio audience and have them ask the questions. It seemed a very odd halfway house to my mind. And I think in a way, Boris Johnson was a winner because not only did the format help him, but it also helps him justify his reluctance to do more of these things. It is hard to think after last night that the country would be in a massively better place if we'd had four or five of these debates already. It does rather justify his reluctance to do them.
And Katie, what is next in the contest? What are we expecting today?
So we are now moved to the knockout rounds, and the previous ballots were about meeting a certain threshold after the 1922 committee decided to try and speed up the contest given the number of people who thought they should be prime minister. And I think if you look at the ballot yesterday, it was Sajid Javid who scraped through. It was Roy Stewart who was then behind him. And I think there was a sense of who was going to be knocked out today. Now, it would seem that Sajid Javid is the most vulnerable, but there's already some talk of, you know, a change in the wind if you look at what happened yesterday, because Roy Stewart seemed to lose a bit of momentum. Sajid Javid in that debate made clear that he thought the UK should leave by the end of October. And you've heard a few MPs, perhaps not necessarily planning to do this, but there is some talk of having almost a stop Stuart operation or stop Rory, which would mean RAB supporters, for example, not moving their vote straight to Boris Johnson, because Boris Johnson is home and dry already, you know, in 120 something and going up, and instead moving their support to Sajid Javid, therefore pushing Rory Stewart out. And that would mean that you wouldn't have Rory Stewart going forward. You reduce the chance of him having it in the final two and it being a bruising contest. But there's lots of whispers going around, and it's clearly a secret ballot. And there's also talk, we've seen Rory Stewart make this offer. I don't know how well can we see that he is willing to partner up with another cabinet candidate on the condition that he is still the leader. Yes, exactly. So if Michael Gove or Jeremy Hunt want to join his team and sign up to his no to no deal Brexit policy, and they are happy for him to still be the front player, then they could give him his votes, and they currently have more than him, I'd probably point out slightly. But again, there's whisperings that different camps are talking to each other. I don't know if it will lead to much, but I think there is a sense that now we're into the knockout stages. I think people are more likely to come up with these schemes to try and push their agenda than previous.
James, are you expecting Sajid Javid to be knocked out given he got the fewest votes yesterday?
I would be very wary of making any predictions because it is all so close. You know, there are, what, four votes between Sajid Javid and Rory Stewart, and now my maths is going to let me down at some point soon. And then only a handful of votes between Rory Stewart and Michael Gove, and then only five votes between Michael Gove and Jeremy Hunt. It is very congested. It's, what, 13 votes between Sajid Javid and Jeremy Hunt. I think Sajid Javid's hope is that, as Katie said, there is a tactical operation going on to try and stop Rory Stewart. I spoke to one Brexiteer MP who said, look, I want my vote to count today. I know Boris Johnson is through to the final two because he's already way over the 105 mark that he needs. And I want my vote to count today, so I'm going to vote for Sajid Javid to try and stop Rory Stewart. I think it could backhandedly compliment Rory Stewart. He has really got under the skin of a lot of Brexiteers. And I think there is also a worry among some people who are NatWest and Boris Johnson supporters that the longer Roy Stewart stays in the contest, the more kind of damage he will inflict on Boris Johnson. And so not bothering to call certain people whose votes they might be able to pick up and letting Sajid Javid have first call on them might be a sensible strategy if that gets Roy Stewart out of the way quicker. Now, I would say this about any kind of forms of tactical voting is you don't know how much that works the other side. You know, how much do people who really don't like the idea of no-deal Brexit think that even if they're publicly declared for another candidate, they might back Rory Stewart in an attempt to demonstrate the strength of, to put the frighteners on Boris Johnson about going for that tactic? So what I would say is, frankly, don't believe anything until we get the results at 6 o'clock tonight.
Thank you, James, and thank you, Katie. And we'll obviously have full breaking news, analysis and podcasts on Coffee House throughout the day. Thanks for listening.